141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Please gamble responsibly.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard. Brendan Rodgers says Zenit are favourites for tomorrow's Europa League tie. We'll hear from the Celtic boss and his opposite number, Roberto Mancini. Alex McLeish is firmly in the Scottish FA's sights to become the next national team manager. And as Hamilton prepare for the return of Greg Docherty with Rangers this weekend, we'll speak to a Hamilton Accies coach who knows him better than most. Yes, it is Valentine's Day, one of the most romantic days of the year. And what a romantic duo we've got lined up for you this evening. Mark Guidi and Jim Duffy. Which actually reminds me, I think a good way to kick off, Mark, right, here's something I've got for the listeners tonight. Just a wee bit of a theme I think we can run, maybe on Twitter, maybe in the phones. Your first footballing love. Who, or maybe what, was your first footballing love?
One of my first I remember getting the Scotland goalkeeper in World Cup 1982, talking, it was the away one, the blue one.
Okay.
Kind of light blue, Alan Ruff, synonymous with Alan Ruff during the 82 World Cup. I remember that. And then a kind of love was Neville Southall, was my goalkeeping hero. And just by chance, I happened to meet him at a football tournament when I was, I don't know, 11, 12, 13, 14, whatever I was. Got my photo taken. With him, so aye, that's maybe if that's the kind of lines that you're talking about, it'd be along those,
yes,
along those lines.
I'm happy with that. I didn't expect Neville Southall. It's not what I pictured as being your love, but I get
in terms of goalkeeping ability,
footballing love, Jim. Who was your first?
Yeah, my first kind of main kind of memory in terms of loving football was Jimmy Johnson, and watching him. I think it was against Red Star Belgrade, but I think that was a game that he was told to. He didn't need to fly, and he was absolutely amazing. And that I think encapsulates what you love about football. Someone who entertains you, someone who gets you off your seat and hoot, someone who makes you want to come back again. So yeah, wee jinky, obviously all those many, many years ago.
Yeah, well, just a bit of fun to kick us off. You can keep them coming all throughout the show. What was your, who was your first footballing love? You know the number if you want to get in touch, and if you don't, here it is, 0141 951 1025. We are on Twitter at Clyde SSB as well. Let's kick off by hearing from Brendan Rodgers, shall we? He believes that Zenit are favourites going into tomorrow's Europa League tie, and says it would be seen as an upset if Celtic manage to progress. Now, the Celtic boss has highlighted the quality that Roberto Mancini has at his disposal, and claims that the amount of money other teams have to spend will always mean it's tough for Scottish sides in Europe.
I think it's fair to say that, you know, in terms of the, I suppose, the standards of both teams across Europe, I think it's be fair to say that they would obviously be favourites. People certainly within football will probably look at it and see Zenit as the team that probably would be favourites to go through. You know, they've won, what, 5 out of 6 games in the Europa League qualification, and will come into this competition maybe as one of the favourites, you know, with the quality that they have. But there'll always be pressure when you're a Celtic manager and player, you know, despite what disparity there is between the finances. You know, you want to do well, you want to do well for your supporters, and of course we want to get through into the last 16. So we'll always put that pressure on ourselves. But it's something that I've always said is a privilege when you work at a club like Celtic, and what we have to do is just do our very, very best. It's always going to be difficult for Scottish teams, that's the reality. So unless something magical happens and there's a huge financial input into the club, then of course it'll always be a challenge for us. But it's still one that we have to, you know, we have to enjoy. Like I say, you have to be realistic. We know where we're at. But it shouldn't stop any hope of us always wanting to cause an upset.
So, Brendan Rodgers says Zenit are favourites for this tie. Do you agree? Do you disagree? 0141 951 1025. Mark Guidi, can you understand where he's coming from?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously Zenit coming out of the break, looking at the Russian table, they're second in the Russian table, ahead of the likes of Spartak and CSKA, Lokomotiv are top. I get the point about them, you know, being a little bit ring rusty in terms of lack of competitive action for a couple of months. But over the piece, and taking into account Celtic's form, not Celtic's results, but Celtic's form, some of the games that they've played, and taking into account the fact that unfortunately Celtic Park is no longer a fortress when it comes to European games, then I would say that Zenit, I'm loath to use the word clear favourites, but I think they're heavy favourites yet.
I don't think they're heavy favourites in terms of the, you know, what's on the pitch. I mean, Brendan, I think, alluding to, you know, the financial, you know, strength that Zenit have in comparison to Scottish football in general. But Celtic on the pitch, I think, have got more than enough quality to compete in this match, and particularly the fact that they haven't had competitive games. It doesn't matter how many times you see, and we're forever making excuses about our teams when it comes into the early qualifier rounds. Oh, we haven't had any games yet, you know, we're not up to speed yet, and we're always saying that. So this is a very similar situation. Although they're halfway through the league, they've had a shutdown, so in effect they're on, you know, a pre-season break. And the first major game back is against Celtic at Celtic Park. So I think if Celtic come out the traps, get at them, you know, maybe just catch them, you know, just looking, searching for their second wind, then I think Celtic can get through in the tie, even though, yeah, of course, it's extremely difficult.
What do you make of Brendan Rodgers' assessment then that Zenit are favourites? Fair comment or offering the opposition too much respect? Anthony Neal's on Twitter. He says, Zenit have spent $80 million on players this summer alone. I can see why Brendan would say that, but I'm fed up of hearing the same old excuse every time we get beat. Budget, budget, budget. I won't be using this as an excuse if we lose on Thursday. And Ted says, not what we want to hear, Brendan. With the players we've got at our disposal, home advantage, yes, and the salaries you guys are picking up, we should be beating teams like Zenit at Parkhead. Having said that, we had a Russian football expert on the programme last night, Jim Duffy, outlining some of the strengths that Zenit have, and the way that, in particular in the Europa League, they've been very impressive. You look back at their previous results, I think it was home and away, 3-1 wins against Real Sociedad, for instance, one of the top performers in the competition so far. So yes, we know it's in the Europa League, but can you see why Chris Davis said yesterday it would be a Champions League style test?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean, the quality in the Europa League, you know, is outstanding. You know, people go on about the Champions League, and if you want to look at it, all the top two seeds in all the groups are outstanding. But, you know, below that, you know, Europa League is probably a match for anyone else. And, you know, I think last year with Manchester United winning it and going out to qualify for the Champions League, I think that sent a message to a lot of clubs as well. Wait a minute, here's another opportunity for us to get in there. And it gave it a little bit more credibility. So, yeah, I think it's a tougher task than it may have been, you know, a couple of years ago. But I still go back to the point that I think that if Celtic play their very best and they haven't had a competitive game for a couple of months, then, you know, I think Celtic could put themselves in a strong position. But I think we always say the first games are normally just a little bit cagier than they used to be. I think people they want to stay in a tie, and I think Celtic will be no different from anyone else.
Celtic fans, you've been a little bit shy so far. Do you agree with Brendan Rodgers that you are underdogs for tomorrow, or do you not? Why not let us know? 0141 951 1025. I'm enjoying the first footballing loves coming in on Twitter as well. Lots of people are taking part in that. Andrew Glenn watching Ronaldo and Ronaldinho at the 2002 World Cup. Kevin says Danny McGrain and Tommy Burns. Cameron Hunter, my first footballing love, Ali McCoist. He recently came into my work. Safe to say I was weak at the knees. Well, bit of an insight into Cameron's life there. What about this this home advantage market, as you speak of? Because there was a time when Celtic Park was thought of as a fortress, and I think we all know undeniably the atmosphere can be incredible, as good as anywhere on a big European night. But of course recently that's not really translated in to results.
No, it's not, Gordon. And you know, the atmosphere is still terrific. You still feel the hairs in the back of your neck going up, you know, particularly in Champions League nights when you hear that music. And there's been a few over the years, but when you think back to Martin O'Neill's time and Gordon Strachan's time, Parkhead was a fortress, and they were beating Juventus, they were beating Lyon, they were beating Manchester United, they were qualifying for the last 16. I know you can say now, you know, like a decade if not longer on, that the goalposts have moved in terms of the financial disparity between likes of Celtic and other major European clubs, and just now getting to the Champions League is a major achievement for Celtic. Gets them 25 million, etc, etc. But even Europa League games Celtic have struggled to win. Six home games in Champions League under Brendan Rodgers, not a victory. So Celtic need to try and build that up again over a period of 2 or 3 years to get it back to being a proper fortress. It's almost as if now opposition actually enjoy coming to Celtic Park because atmosphere is brilliant, the stadium is brilliant, there's a good surface, but it's no longer a place that brings the fear out in the opposition.
Stuart's in Cambus Lang. Hi, Stuart.
Hi, guys. It's just about tomorrow night. I just think Celtic will need to up their game. More so, they've not been playing well in the last couple of weeks, but we're capable of playing well and capable of getting them a game tomorrow night. What worries me is at the back. I just think defensively, we're not there yet. We need to get that sorted out. And I fear going over there because we know what like Celtic are in Europe. I don't know whether it's a psychological thing or not away from home, but we just don't seem to do it. You know, just want to see what you think of that, boys.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's been, you know, with the injuries to Boyata in particular, I think that Celtic, you know, have that area, and obviously they brought Cropper in, and he's been injured pretty much from day one. So, you know, they don't have the same level of competition. Shevchenko has been put out on loan, and young Ayers learning his trade, really. So it's...
I'm not a Boyata fan. I think Boyata gets found out at that level. I think he's okay on a Saturday when we're playing the Premier League. If you watch the previous European games, I think he gets found out badly.
I think that you know, the top level,
he's picked up the injury as well, of course.
Yeah, he's injured, but you know, the thing is, I still think Celtic's best two are Boyata and Simunovic, and I think that's their strongest pairing. Now, whether Brendan goes with a three, which he does on occasion, or whether he goes with a two, but it's not just about two centre backs or one centre back. It's about a unit. It's about a back four and a midfield unit in front of them. And, you know, Brendan has actually come out and said at times when Lee Griffiths and things like that aren't playing, listen, he sees that as the first start of his defence, you know, how much pressure they can put in the opposition. So I think it's just the collective way that Celtic play, and they have to be collectively better at pressing the game and collectively better when they lose the ball, because they're not used to it in Scottish football. Let's be honest. I mean, Celtic lose the ball in Scottish football, they're not lazy, but they could be if they wanted to, because they're always going to get the ball back within a few seconds. Whereas in European football, they can lose the ball, they might not get it back until they're kicking off again. You know, so it's a different game entirely, and it's hard when you're so used to dominating the game as Celtic are and domestically to win in a game where you maybe not get the same share of the ball. So collectively, I think Celtic's got to be a better defensive unit, but I wouldn't just put it down to Boyata or one central defender. I think it's got to be each unit has got to work in tandem with each other.
What are the main...
Yeah, I mean, I think Celtic will win. I said earlier on, and because, as I said, for me, I they are a good side and they're up to speed. I think it might have been a different game, but I don't think they're up to speed yet, and I just can't see how you can just click your fingers and just get that. So for me, I think Celtic will nick it. I think it'll be a one goal advantage. I would like it to be 1-0 rather than 2-1, but I think it'll be Celtic will be just good enough to nick a win.
What are the main thanks Stuart, what are the main big decisions Brendan Rodgers has tomorrow, Mark? For instance, a lot of the season has been dominated by sort of Griffiths versus Dembele. That's not an issue tomorrow, really. Dembele plays, you would imagine. Griffiths been injured. What are his biggest decisions tomorrow?
Centre half, central pairing, partnership.
Henry potentially in for only second.
Jack Henry potentially in. Yep, you're right. Again, you know, not knowing the way Zenit will go. But does he look at a back three? Is he best having three central defenders, or is he best just going with his flat back four? Does he where does he play Kieran Tierney? Does he bring him in one? So there's all those kind of decisions to make. He'll have done his homework on Zenit. They're a really good side. You know, they have got a number of Argentinian players. They've got Rigoni, they've got Mamana, they've also got Crescito, who's an Italian international, so I think he's the captain at Zenit, and they've also got Mancini as well. So they're a really good side, and you know, if Jim's right and it's a 1-0 would be a fantastic result for Celtic tomorrow night, bearing in mind when it's come to it, they've not won many games in the past 4 or 5 years in European football, so that would be a terrific result. But I get the feeling that I can't see them keeping a clean sheet. I think it could be a 2-2 or something like that.
Paul Andrew Martin's on Twitter pointing out that previous European games in Russia for Celtic have had a magnificent winning record over the years, which is a fair point. Of course, I'm thinking even Jim, like Charlie Masonda, for instance, because I'm very sure that these were the type of games he was brought to Celtic to play in. But of course, he's only just arrived. He's perhaps trying to find his feet. So again, big decisions for Brendan Rodgers to make.
Yeah, that was the one I mentioned, you know, last week. I feel that, you know, Celtic may have to be, as I mentioned, collectively, I think they might just have to sacrifice one flair player. I think it'll be Brown and Cham in the middle of the pitch, and that one ahead of them. You know, if he plays a three, he might put McGregor in there. He obviously was hoping that Rogic had a run out, didn't happen. So he might put McGregor in. Armstrong's injured. I think if he was fit, he'd have been in. So I think he might sacrifice. I mean, I think Forrest is great. I think Sinclair's always seems to turn up at the big games. No doubt about it. And he's got Dembele. I think those are definites. So for me, it's Cham and Brown. And it's just that one. I think it's either Charlie Musonda or does he go with Callum McGregor, who gives him just a little bit more, you know, knowledge in terms of being a natural midfielder, so he could fall in and maybe just condense
his
space.
They said that Kabwaye, when the three of them played together a couple of games, I think particularly against Hearts, the three in the middle of the park, Brown and Cham, and Kabwaye, isn't it?
Kwasi,
yeah.
You know, that might be an option for him. He just wants to stay, you know, really solid too.
Okay, I did say I wanted to get your first footballing love memories since we are on Valentine's Day, of course. I'm loving these coming in on Twitter, I must admit. What have we got? Tam says, born in 93, so mine's Henrik Larsson. I've got another one coming in here from, who was it? Oh, there is Stevie, saying that his first footballing love was the 80s Dundee United team. And what about this for a bit of detail? A real personal insight from Ollie. He says, my first footballing love, a girl who stood along for me on the terraces at Brockville in the mid to late 90s. I was too shy to speak to her. We did hug once when the Bairns scored a goal, and it was magic. Oh, to be 15 again.
Honestly,
love that.
I'm filling up. My eyes are watering.
Absolutely. Just,
not in a separate sort of thing entirely, but just shows you how you get wrapped up in football. I was at Norwich, and I was with Peter Grant, and anybody that knows Peter, he just loves and breathes football. Anyway, the two of us decide, we're waiting a game, we come back, we'll go for a bite to eat, and we go for a bite to eat, and we get into a restaurant, and it's all couples and log fire and all the menus were all done in red ribbons and flowers on the table, and the two just looked at each other as if, what's this? What's the matter in here? And it was just completely so. Either Lorraine, his wife, or John's wife would not have been happy, because the two is completely forgot it was Auntie's Day. But we did have a lovely night together, I have to say, and he's not a bad kisser.
Too much information. Rangers fans, some breaking news for you since we've been on air. James Tavernier has committed his future to the club by signing a new 3.5-year deal. I know some of you have been very impressed with what you've seen from James Tavernier. So now's your chance to tell us, what do you make of that news that he's signed a new deal? What's impressed you about him this season? And I would imagine most of you are going to, listen, maybe some of you aren't happy, I don't know. But let us know your thoughts on James Tavernier's new contract. 0141 951 1025. We'll get to that after the travel with Amber.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com, backing Scottish football all season long. Please gamble responsibly.
Mark Guidi and Jim Duffy are here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. We're trying to cover off all the day's big footballing stories, and we're asking for your first footballing loves since it's Valentine's Day. Davy Nicholson's been in touch saying that his was Davy Cooper. And Jim Duffy, being one of your celebrity fans, of course, our very own George Bowie, was just telling me today that his first date with his wife, who he's now been married to for a long time, was actually at Capello. Is that a romantic setting? You spend a lot of time there.
Yeah, it's very romantic, of course it is, but I'm even more surprised they're still together after taking the date. I thought she would have chucked him after that first date, but great. It just shows you that there is love at Capello.
There we are, Rangers fans. This might be something for you to get involved in. 01419511025. I want your thoughts on James Tavernier signing a new contract. I know there's been a bit of speculation about this in recent days. Well, it's now done and dusted. 3.5-year deal for James Tavernier, captain the side, of course, at the weekend, and he's committed his future to the Ibrox side at the moment. We're going to speak to John and Parkhead, who's got some thoughts on that. Jim, how much has he improved this season? The Rangers fans seem to really be enjoying what he's contributing.
Yeah, again, I go back to, you know, balance of the team. You know, we spoke about Celtic earlier on. People always look at, oh, how do we sign a centre half, or, you know, you should get this. And it's not just one player. And I think Taverner's the same. I think he said Candias in front of him for a lot of the time, and he is a really hard working player, which means that he's not getting exposed so much defensively, and he can still, you know, he's very good going forward, always was. That was never a problem going forward, his delivery on the run, you know, set pieces, all these kind of things. and he was always terrific going forward, but people were really sceptical of his defensive qualities. But the fact is that Rangers have changed the shape a little bit. He's now got a bit of protection on that side. Then he's much more comfortable, and he's grown in confidence. There's no doubt about it. And yeah, and I think yeah, he's been a really, really good player for Rangers this year. There's no question about that.
That seemed like a good bit of business to you, Mark Guidi, getting him tied down at the moment.
Yeah, it does. You know, I think James Tavernier has been really good. You know, over the piece, great signing. It was a double deal with Martin Wycon a couple of years ago when Matt Warburton signed him. But I think he's been really good defensively. Yeah, you know, it could be better, but he is a major asset to the Rangers team. And, you know, in the big games, and I'll talk about the Celtic Rangers game at Parkhead on New Year's Eve. I was at the game, and Tavernier was outstanding for Rangers that afternoon. So great business for them. Another thing, if clubs do come sniffing, it puts Rangers in a strong position because he is one of their major assets in terms of market value.
Okay, John's in Parkhead. He's a Rangers fan. John, is that some good news for you?
Delighted, Gordon, aye.
What's impressed you about him most this season?
Just what Jim Duffy said there. I mean, he's been a good sign sometimes, maybe early doors in his career at Ibrox. His defending is a wee bit suspect, but I think Candias has made a big, big difference this year. Also, maybe took a wee bit more pressure off him. I mean, Candias chases back and all, and lets maybe Tavernier maybe go forward. And I mean, he's good, he's quick, he's good with his feet, and I mean, he's... To me, it's a brilliant bit of news, and I've got a couple of points.
Yeah, deal with that first, John. Then I will let you back in. I promise, Jim. For instance, the penalty he gave away against Scott Allen that allowed people to go see. You know, he's still sort of got defensive frailties. But in fairness, if you also look, I think it was the Aberdeen game, wasn't it, when Aberdeen had those chances late on? James Tavernier was showing off his defensive skills. He was blocking everything, throwing his body in front. So I think it is a side of his game he's probably brushed up on as well.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's not a defender, you know, probably playing that hasn't given away a penalty at one time or another. But what he has done is he's improved defensively. I mean, he's not perfect, but he's improved. And, you know, like the guys are saying that he's, I think it's helped by the fact that he's had that such a hard working, player. Rangers are generally playing with a four in midfield somewhere along the line. They might be as a 4-2-3-1 or, you know, whatever, but they've got wide guys in front. And that's helped, whereas I think pre that in the Matt Warburton era, he used to keep the three up the top with two wingers. I mean, I played against, well, not me personally, but your team, Mont, played against Rangers several times, and you could hear him saying to likes like Barry McKinnon, no, don't get back, stay up. So he basically just said, listen, we'll take the chance. And it was a lot about cat and mouse, but against the top teams, when you do that, then you're exposed. So Tavernier was getting exposed a little bit, and I think then the criticism would come on top of him, and I don't think it was all down to him. Since they're more of a unit now, they're a tougher nut to crack, Rangers. There's a little bit more steel about them, there's more energy in midfield, there's more defensive quality in midfield as well. Then he's getting protected, and he still can use that asset getting forward. So overall, it's been better from Rangers in all departments, and Tavernier's definitely one of the most improved players in the country.
Yeah, 6 goals and 8 assists so far, I think, for James Tavernier. That's something that George Fry picks up on Twitter. Says, never really doubted Tav's ability since being here. All-round talent and just enhanced now what he brings. Very few fullbacks around like him these days. Not many teams wouldn't gain from his assists and goals per season. Let's see what... John did have another point to make, didn't he? Sorry, John, on you go.
I've got 2 points, Gordon. Obviously, just once to Mark, obviously once to Jim. Mark, how you doing?
Hello, John.
Mark, a couple of weeks ago you were on, and I couldn't hear you. Somebody in the back of the taxi, and it was a Celtic fan, and he was talking about Rangers, so I couldn't hear what you were saying. it was something about investment. You said, I just caught the tail end of it. You had something about investment coming in the summer. I've asked a few people, and the guys have asked taxi drivers, they did something in the taxi at the same time, so maybe kind of know really what you said. I just want to kind of, if you can maybe open up a wee bit. Oh, yeah. what you meant.
What I said, John, was that I'm told there is some really positive news coming from Rangers pretty soon. I'll say that, and I didn't specify investment. I said it could be investment, it could be a restructuring of behind the scenes at the club that helps to move it forward. But let me say, my most decorated Ibrox mole assures me that there is something positive coming up. As to exactly what it is, John, I don't know, but I'm just told that there's there's a bit of a spring in the step at the moment behind the scenes, and it's gearing towards something pretty positive.
There we are, John. You're just going to have to watch this space, and if Mark Weedy's wrong, then you know the number. You can phone in and give him stick for it. I'm happy with that. Let's move to another John. Always confuses me when I've got two Johns on the screen. This one's in, yeah, we've spoke to John in Parkhead. Let's speak to John in Maryhill. Hi, John.
Hi guys, how's it going?
Not bad, John. You're another Rangers fan. Give me your reaction then to James Tavernier's new deal tonight.
He's a young lad. It's improving. I was at the Rangers and Hibs game with my friend, and the penalty that he gave away was really poor. Something you'd probably see in an amateur part on a Saturday afternoon. It was pretty dreadful. He dived in when there was no need. So I would say there's a lot of improvement. It's great news for Rangers. It's just another player committed to the cause. So I think everybody's going to be happy. But regarding his game, I think Jim touched earlier on, he's got to obviously work in his game that way rather than diving in. So that was my point with that one.
How do you coach that, Jim? If that's an accusation that John and Maryhill makes now, he probably has been making it for the last couple of years. Do you find that some players are... they sort of have that in them, and it's very hard to eradicate, because he's not particularly young.
No, you get rash players and defenders, but ultimately if they're rash too often, they'll not be playing, or they shouldn't be playing, or they'll not play at a certain level, that's for sure. You know, you've got to learn to stand on your feet. You've got to learn to, you know, close the game's different as well now. You know, regardless, I mean, even if it's outside the box, you can't go lunging into tackles nowadays. I mean, I watched Otamendi last night, and although Man City won comfortably, he still was that wee bit in him. You think he could be rash.
And that's on, at that level.
Early on in the game, I think it was a penalty. Boy knocks it past him. He runs into him, but it wasn't given. But he still, there still is a little, there's a little moment, you know, where you think that there's an element of doubt about him. And I think James Tavernier still maybe has that at times where. But it's getting less and less, and he's getting better, and that's all you can say. He's improved as a defender. His overall game has improved. His positional play has improved. Not only I feel that in terms of one-to-one defending, but there was a lot of times I felt that between the right centre-back and him, there was a huge gap. Mm. A huge gap, yeah. Where teams used to exploit either for strikers to go down the sides, or when it was cross balls, he was a bit of a daydreamer. He would, you know, players would get inside. All of that's improved. Again, as I said, not perfect. But I think credit has to go to Graham Murty, because I think there's a better organisation there. And the more information you give players, the more they're capable of taking on, then the better they should become.
Can I come in again, guys?
On you go, John.
What about Jimmy Nicol coming in as a defender, with experience playing the Rangers at the time when Rangers were a fourth and were very much all getting stuck in for the jersey and playing for Rangers, and they were going out there and getting stuck in. Maybe Jimmy Nicol coming in was maybe pulled him aside and maybe gave him a wee bit of education about no diving in and being a bit better to his game. His crossing still is a wee bit poor for me. His final ball can be a wee bit poor. But
he's so many assists, so John. He gets a terrific amount of assists.
I always thought that would be one of his main strengths, John.
Well, I wouldn't want Jim giving him any advice anyway. I used to watch Jim 30 years ago when he used to hout people up nail at Roy Aiken.
Yeah, well, I think, as I said before, the game's changed, John. That's the thing, you know. It's more of a technical game now. But
have you still got your boots in the cupboard, Jim?
Unfortunately, they're nailed to the floor, mate. You know, so they're not even a claw hammer could get them out now.
Mark, is that? Listen, everybody's got their own opinion. No problem with that whatsoever. I'm just surprised, because most of the Rangers fans we have on talking about James Tavernier, they praise his delivery, yeah, and his crossing ability. But John thinks that that's an area for him to brush up.
No, I think that's one of his strengths. He's got a great engine for getting up and down. I think he can pick a ball from a wide area. Another thing I've got to remember, as I often say in this programme, you know, supporters of many teams will pick fault in their players. You know, for example, John there saying, oh, Tavernier, you know, his final ball could be better. Or you'll hear somebody, oh, he's not got a great left foot, or he's not particularly good in the air, or he's half a yard.
We look at what people can't do.
But yeah, another thing is, see if there was the perfect player, or they were good at all those things, they wouldn't be playing here. So you've got to remember your level of player that we can attract because of budgets, and you've got to allow for flaws in their game, because if there was no flaws, with all respect, they wouldn't be anywhere near the Scottish game. They'd be in the Premiership or La Liga or whatever.
I was asking you for your first footballing loves, since it is the 14th of February. They have been varied and quite enjoyable for me to read, I must admit. Keith McGibbon's on. First player I saw, outstanding skill, was Mark Walters. Great winger, scored a lot of goals. And John Paul Monaghan, my first football love was the maestro, Paul McStay, my idol. Growing up in the 80s, a young Celtic fan, he was a great player, professional and a role model. Gave his all for the badge. The fans won't ever see his like again. We're going to look at this story that's been developing over the last couple of days. Alex McLeish has had some contact from the Scottish FA about the management role. We'll look at that after the travel with Amber.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Download the app and score a tap-in. Please gamble responsibly.
Jim Duffy and Mark Guidi here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. I've been asking you for your first footballing loves. Kano, I think this is, on Twitter, talks about his first love being the 70s Brazilian team. He goes on to rhyme some of them off. My dad had a video all about them, played it to death. And John McIlvany says, 1979, age 12, presented by Player of the Year award from Johnny Doyle. I've loved Celtic ever since. Missed out on the Players Player of the Year by one vote, by the way. The headmaster's son won it. Tut tut. There we are. He's clearly no bitter after all these time. Only 1979. I'm glad you're over it, John. After 7 o'clock tonight, we are going to hear from Roberto Mancini. Of course, he is in Glasgow with his Zenit St Petersburg side, a manager you'll all know fairly well from his time in the English Premier League. Well, we're going to hear from him after 7 o'clock. But in the meantime, I want to get your thoughts on Alex McLeish's credentials for Scotland. We know that, well, the Scottish FA have made inquiries to Alex McLeish. There was a Scottish FA board meeting today. Now, he's not necessarily the only one in the frame, but he's one very much in the sights, Mark Guidi, about a week or so on since Walter Smith said no thank you.
Yeah, well, the credible candidates are starting to dwindle, I think. And, you know, Alex McLeish tops the list. I can totally understand why. If it's the next Scotland manager is to be Alex McLeish, I don't have a problem with that appointment at all. I think Alex still got a lot to offer. I think he's at that age now where he will be absolutely happy with the Scotland job. I don't think he's using it in terms of a stepping stone to try and get back into club football. So I think as long as things go well, Alex can be there for a couple of campaigns. If it's not Alex, you know, who's it going to be? Is it Malky Mackay? If they're going to look in the house, then I would say, yeah, Malky is the outstanding candidate in there. For me, with there being a bit of uncertainty around SFA just now in terms of no chief executive, etc., I would make the next appointment, for everybody's sake, until the end of this calendar year, for the four competitive games against Albania and Israel, so that there's a chance to review the process. I think, unless we get a chief executive in, I think that is the best way to go about it just now. Now, for example, say it's Alex McLeish and they top the group. I'm sure that Alex's advisor would find some kind of way of making sure there's a clause in there where something automatic kicks in. But if it doesn't quite go to plan and we don't top the group, then it's a chance to just sit down and review things, because I think there's just so much, just there's not enough stability at the moment.
Now, it doesn't look like he's a clear favourite amongst those at the Scottish FA board. Mark Guidi says he'd have no problem with Alex McLeish being named Scotland manager. But what do you think? 0141 951 1025, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, I've already been on record of stating that for me it was Walter Smith, and you know, a similar sort of situation with Alec, is that he's been there, he knows the psyche, he knows the expectations, the job, he's been there before, and I think that you know, he'll have learned from any mistakes he made. But I'm for campaigns. I think that it's okay looking at, you know, philosophies and you know, trying to, you know, put a direction into Scottish football, but I think that's for other people to do. I think we need to qualify for a major tournament. So for me, it's about campaigns. So I'm a little bit like Mark. Whoever it is, you know, say, listen, this is your remit. It's a one and only remit. You know, qualify us, or we have to review the position. And that for me is what it's all about. There's no point in trying to dress it up any other way.
On Twitter, not detecting a great deal of love for Alex McLeish at the moment. Stephen Talent says, a massive step backwards, a lot of good players available coming through and already in the squad, he would ruin them. Seems quite harsh. Anthony Neal says, said it before, we'll say it again, he walked out during a campaign for the first job that came along. Not exactly the kind of forward thinking that is needed at the SFA. Just goes to show a total clear out is needed. Too many living in the past. That does seem to be a problem for fans, which they're well entitled to feel. This idea that if you walked out, so to speak, before Mark, yeah, that's it, that should be the chance gone.
Yeah, listen, if some fans feel that way, then I totally respect it. But I think there's got to be some kind of process of where you forgive. You know, everybody's entitled to.
Oh, a number of players
decisions
over the years have walked out, haven't they? Say they wouldn't play and then they've come back and played.
And they come back. Look, if it's not going to be Alec McLeish or somebody that's out of work or somebody that's in house, then where do we go? So if we look directly at the Scottish game, for me, there's three candidates. There's Dennett McInnes at Aberdeen, there's Steve Clark at Kilmarnock, and there's Neil Lennon at Hibs. Mm-hmm. So do you want to pay compensation or win a position to pay compensation and a sat and a heavy salary as well? Only the SFA board can answer that.
Stevie and Paisley, what do you think? Hello, Stevie. Are you with us, Stevie?
I'm here, right?
Hope I'm not interrupting your Valentine's Day, Stevie. You've got us, Stevie. You've got myself, Mark Guidi and Jim Duffy. What more could you need? What are your thoughts on this, Alex McLeish?
No, what was I going to say? I thought we Strachan did well. All right. But you're bringing in Alex McLeish. Why don't you get the two of them together? Look, Walter Smith did really well with Tommy Burns, God bless him. Ali McCoist, you know. And I thought the three of them were fantastic together, you know. So I can't see why we can't get Alec McLeish and Gordon Strachan and together in the Scotland team.
Can you imagine that phone call, Mark? Gordon, by the way. Any chance of coming back?
You need to make Gordon the manager.
Well, there's still Stuart Regan is doing it, so that is one difference.
One obstacle out of the way.
Finances. They're both entitled to a really good salary. It's not there. Listen, I know what you're saying, Stevie. I see exactly where you're coming from, but I can't see it working for a number of reasons.
I mean, Stevie, do you really think Gordon Strachan's going to leave as the manager, then be out in the wilderness for a while and come back as a number two to Alex McLeish?
Well, as I said, the two of them done really well in European football, both with Manchester United and Aberdeen, you know. And I just can't see why you go with the tried and tested, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with Stevie too much.
Give it a go anyway.
Yeah, I don't agree with Stevie in the sense that Gordon Strachan, I mean, Gordon might just actually he doesn't like the press too much, as you know. He doesn't like dealing with that side of it. He doesn't like dealing with the hierarchy as in the bureaucracy of it all. But he does love working with players, and he does like being out in the training ground. And he's a training ground manager. He's not a suit manager. He's a guy that likes to be in amongst players. So, and he's probably, you know, made enough money, so he might just well like say, well, I mean, I would quite like the coaching job. So I don't think he's that egotistical that he has to worry about somebody calling him boss or gaffer or whatever happens to be. So I'm not saying that would be the perfect choice, but I understand where Stevie's coming from. That if, you know, maybe better having two heads is better than one, they say.
Scooby Hugh says no, just to emphasise his point there. No three times. Let's move on. Don't want to go backwards. A lot of these, I must admit, are taking on a similar theme.
But Gordon, who is there then?
Well, I was going to say, the next tweet says, if McLeish gets the job, we can close the door on the way out. Why has the far better candidate Clark not been approached? So that he, listen, and I know the way these things work. People are, they're hot when they're hot, and Stevie Clark's hot at the moment, and that's fine. But there is a real groundswell of opinion, Mark, that the question should at least be asked there. You understand that, I would imagine?
Yeah. I mean, I think you've got to explore all avenues at the moment, because I don't think there's an absolutely outstanding candidate left that's kind of said, look, I'm interested. I think there's a number of very good candidates, but I think that the SFA should, the board actually should bring in three or four people. And I think what they should also do, if they haven't already done so, is take the counsel of Sir Alex Ferguson, take the counsel, if he'll take the call, of Walter Smith, take the counsel of Kenny Dalglish, take the counsel of these guys, ask for an opinion, use them as a sounding board. And that's a positive to go and do that, Gordon. It's not a negative to tap into Scottish legends with great experience of football, you know, and maybe that's something that we don't do enough of up here.
Scott is in Govan. He's a Rangers fan. Scott, what's your point tonight?
Good evening, panel.
Hello.
Good evening, Scott.
I've got 2 points. I'll just give you my first one just now. I'm really glad that Tavernier's signing a new contract. He does help some howlers, but his best play well out knows the bad ones that he plays. So I'm definitely glad, pleased that he's getting a new contract. But I don't know why, in the same respect, I don't know why David Wilson never got a new contract. According to what he was
Danny Wilson,
he was quoted the paper saying he wanted to stay. So I don't understand why they just did he keep him there? He really committed to his game for the last 2 months there.
It was quite an interesting story, that, Mark. Yeah. It was an interview in one of the newspapers, Danny Wilson saying he sort of wanted to stay. He thought it was on the cards that he would stay with Pedro Caixinha and then Graham Murty. I think he, in Danny Wilson's own words, he sort of suggested that it was Mark Allen that said that would no longer be possible. Can you understand why Scott's a bit disappointed that he left?
Yeah, I mean, I just expected more from Danny Wilson in terms of what he contributed on the pitch. I know he had a couple of injury problems in his 3 years or so back at the club, but you know, I remember Danny Wilson as a kid, Gordon Jim Brayton at that team with Davy Weir. You know, well, that must be the guts of a decade ago, and he was brilliant. You know, I know Davy Weir helped him along and coached him on the part and different things, but you know, and then he got his move to Liverpool and a couple of loan moves in back to Rangers after a spell with Hearts. But for me, he never really kicked on, and sometimes that can be down to the coaching. You know, I looked at the example of Brendan Rodgers and the improvement he brought in some players, and I wanted to see that. That's what I said when Rangers were appointing Caixinha. It's not all about the budget he's given; it's about improving the guys he's got.
He was improving laterally, though, wasn't he, Jim? Right to the towards the end of this spell, that's when he had come into the team, enjoyed a real run, and that's when fans like Scott were starting to enjoy his performances.
Yeah, but also Rangers have to understand that they have decisions to be made, and Mark Allen's been put in there to make some tough decisions. So if, for instance, Graham Murty's went there and says, listen, I'm looking for Greg Docherty to come in, and I'm looking for, you know, Jason Cummins to come in and Murphy and so on and so forth, all the players are brought in, then you can't just keep loading players. So when there's a player who's maybe got an option of leaving, maybe Matt Almond's went, well, wait a minute, we've got Cardozo, I've still got Alves on the books, you know, we've got Ross McCrory, who we've got real you know, hopes for, we've got Bates, you know, we've got a number of players there that we feel that area is adequately covered. So I'm sorry, that we're not going to offer, you know, the deal you thought they were. We're going to allow you to move on. So it's a tough decision, it's a harsh decision sometimes, but you know, if he maybe performed at a more consistent level for a year or two, I don't think you're then waiting to see what's going to, that offer's going to be there. And I think that was Danny's problem. I think he did improve in the last couple of months, but unfortunately for him, I think it was the timing. And also, as I said to you, I think Rangers are well covered in that area. They don't need another centre-back.
Put it this way, see if the club had allowed Ross McCrory to go, there'd be an outcry, there'd be outrage. Danny Wilson, not so. That tells its own story.
So they signed Ron McCrory in a new contract with his brother as well. So I'm saying that they're doing other things, and you can't just please everyone. And when there's an opportunity, when a player's contract's running down, or if he's got an option somewhere else, it's an easier situation to deal with.
Thanks to Scott in Govan on the Scotland manager situation. Raffles is on Twitter. He says a great candidate is sitting in the studio. And he clears it up by saying, "And it's not Mark Guidi." Thanks for clearing that up. Just in case we were a bit confused on that one.
Beat the pundits with goals in the Scottish Sun. The SPFL and EPL latest every Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday.
We are going to hear from Zenit St. Petersburg manager Roberto Mancini. He knows Brendan Rodgers well. He says he knows Celtic well, and we're going to hear what he had to say after 7 o'clock. But before we do that, it is time for Beat the Pundits. That Jim Duffy and Mark Guidi are standing by. They're nervous, I can sense it. They don't know which way the coin is going to land. One of them is going to play Beat the Pundit, but they need you to play against. So dial the number right now, 0141 951 1025. Now's the time to dial it, and you could play Beat the Pundit after the news.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Bet and play and pull a result out of the bag. Please gamble responsibly.
Mark Guidi and Jim Duffy here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. We're going to hear from Zenit manager Roberto Mancini very soon indeed. And since it's Valentine's Day, keep your first football love stories coming in. Ryan's on Twitter. He says his first love was at Capello for Morton winning the third division in front of 9,000. PS, tell Jim to sign Jack Iredale. And Helen Smith, first football love, Motherwell's Stuart Elliott. That name, a blast from the past. That name was, remember that one, Mark? Going back a fair way. Right, we're going to hear from Roberto Mancini after we do this.
Beat the Pundit with goals in the Scottish Sun. The SPFL and EPL latest every Monday, Wednesday and Saturday.
Okay, let's meet tonight's contestant. He's Jonathan Thompson. He's a Rangers fan from Motherwell, funnily enough. Plenty of mentions for the Well in this section of the show. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm not bad, yourself?
Yes, can't complain at all, Jonathan. You fancy your chances?
Oh, I don't know if it's Mark, you probably know, but I could give Jim Duffy a run through one. It's going to come back and bite me in the face.
I was just going to say that, Jonathan. In fact,
I get a long chin guard on Jonathan.
Jonathan, I think it was last night, Jonathan, we had a big fat zero, so you've not got hugely... You've not got huge shoes to fill. Don't worry about that. But let's see how we get on. Heads, it's Mark Guidi. Tails, it's Jim Duffy. And it is going to be heads. So you're up against Mark Guidi. Let's give him some Clyde 2 to listen to, so that he can't listen to us, Jonathan. And we'll get that clock set up. So it's 30 seconds, Jonathan. Head to head, you can pass. Here is your chance to beat the pundit, okay?
Okay, no bother.
Who are currently top of Scottish League 1?
Ayr.
Filip Kiss is a Slovak footballer who left which Premiership team in 2015? Scottish Premiership.
Dundee United.
Which Kilmarnock player was sent off in the 3-2 win against Dundee last night?
Ed Brophy.
Which footballer shares a name with a precious stone and scored for Aberdeen against Lokomotiv Moscow in 07?
Diamond.
The 1967 Intercontinental Cup was held between Celtic and which Argentinian team?
Buenos Aires, I don't know.
That was a tough one, I must admit. Right, let's get Mark Guidi back. You with us, Mark?
Yep.
Right, okay. Think so? We'll see about that. Same set of questions to you, Mark Guidi. Are you ready?
Go on.
Who is currently top of Scottish League 1?
Beaton.
Filip Kiss is a Slovak footballer who left which Scottish Premiership team in 2015?
Ross County.
Which Kilmarnock player was sent off in a 3-2 win against Dundee last night? Which footballer shares a name with a precious stone and scored for Aberdeen against Lokomotiv Moscow in 07?
Xander Diamond.
The 1967 Intercontinental Cup was held between Celtic and which Argentinian team?
Racing.
And in which year did St Mirren play their last match at Love Street? Quickly.
2010.
Okay. How are you feeling about that, Jonathan? Did your fears...
I'm not going to get none of them.
Jim, don't bring me in it because you're the better nightmare.
Oh god,
Jim's getting a hard time off you, Jonathan. I don't know what he's done to deserve it. Let's
it's
go.
Valentine's Day. Suppose we're loving you.
I still get gout in my knee, so I'm just trying to take it out in someday.
Right, okay. Very romantic. I don't know if you noticed there was a couple of sort of romance related questions in there. Just one or two. Just thought we'd throw them in there. Who are currently top of League 1? Wraith Rovers. I don't know what's romantic about that. I know none of you got it right though, so it was 0-0 to start. Mark Guidi should get points off because Brechin aren't even in that division. But we'll let it pass. Filip Kiss, see what we did there, is a Slovak footballer who left which Scottish Premiership team in 2015? It was Ross County. So Mark Guidi goes into a 1-0 lead. He made it a 2-0 lead, Jonathan, because it was Gary Dicker sent off in the 3-2 win against Dundee last night. And did you see the penalty decision that for the
first?
I'm not surprised he wasn't happy. Let's put it that way. It was Nick Walsh. Which footballer shares a name with a precious stone and scored for Aberdeen against Lokomotiv Moscow in 07? It was Xander Diamond. Well done, Jonathan. You knew your precious stones.
At least I got one.
Hats off to you. Yeah, at least you got one. The 1967 Intercontinental Cup between Celtic and Racing Club. Mark Guidi, I'm impressed at that one. And in which year did St Mirren play their last match at Love Street? It was 2009. Oh. You were close, Mark Guidi. So it was 4 for Mark and a 1 for Jonathan.
That was a bad
night. If only you'd get Jim Duffy, Jonathan, eh?
If you only get me, you'd get beat 5-1. That was
you probably played in that game against Racing.
Not quite, but maybe a few years back, mate.
Hope the gout clears up, Jonathan. Take care. Have a good night. Right. That was Jonathan celebrating Valentine's Day with gout. So well done to Jonathan and Mullow. Didn't have enough to beat Mark Guidi on Beat the Pundit. Keep your calls coming, please. 01419511025. Let's hear from Roberto Mancini. He says he is expecting a tough test at Celtic Park, and he admits the winter shutdown has been a problem. The Italian manager says that Branislav Ivanovic isn't 100%, but says they'll make a final call on the Serbian tomorrow morning.
Always Celtic is a good team. It's clear. Many times they talk, they want to go to play in English Premier League. No, I heard many times. The history is here. Celtic, a club with a big history in the back. I think that they can improve also if they play in a year without opponent. He's going better. He's going better. He's not ready 100%, but with his experience, can stay also in the bench or he can play. We decide tomorrow morning. Always here is difficult game because Celtic at home is a strong team. and also for the supporters that push a lot the team. The crowd is incredible, and we know that we can have a problem also because for us it's the first official game after 2 months. But we can't change this situation, and we need to do our best if we want to get through in the next round. I don't know. It's important that we play a good game. We play an offensive game. We try to score. We try to do our best on the pitch. All our players could play a good game. This is important.
Chris Davis said yesterday, Jim, that when they were at Liverpool, him and Brendan Rodgers, they faced Zenit at this exact time. You know, they had just come off the break, and he said actually they were really fresh, they were really sharp, and they made life really difficult for Liverpool. But Roberto Mancini there saying himself that the winter shutdown has been a problem. We spoke to a Russian football journalist last night who says it will definitely be an issue. Can you see any way that it doesn't play into Celtic hands?
No, I said at the start of the programme I think it is an advantage, but you know, you never know. Some players that, of course, you know, refresh, but I still don't think you normally need 3 or 4 at least competitive games before you go up to speed. There may be parts of the game you do well, but generally speaking, you know, you run out of steam a little bit towards the end, or you maybe don't start the game. You know, you just need you need to get into the tempo and the pace of the game, and that sometimes takes a little bit of time. And that's the reason why I'm saying I think if Celtic come out the traps quickly, get at them, don't allow them to settle in, don't allow them to get a rhythm, then I think that might give them a stranglehold in the game. And if they do that, then if they manage the game properly after that, then they can come out the victors.
Even just Roberto Mancini, Mark, and I appreciate I'm maybe looking at this a bit simplistically and going on reputation and so on, but he is a vastly experienced manager, yeah, a very high level. Managers like him don't come cheap. They tend to be able to pick and choose their jobs to an extent. So it all just adds to the fact that this is a big European side that's coming with a big European, yeah, manager as well.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Zenit. You know, they've been at the forefront of European football maybe 15 years or so. I remember the terrific team that won the UEFA Cup in 2008, beat Rangers in the final. You know, Arshavin and boys like that, Dick Advocaat obviously managing the team, Pogbrignac, the striker as well,
yeah,
played there. And there was somebody who was the blonde haired guy that went for about 30 million. He was terrific, middle of the pack, can't remember. But so they had a great team, and you look at them, they're always there or thereabouts, but they're always well financed as well. They've always got a good budget. Mancini, you're right, Gordon, brilliant manager. Look at his achievements, went to Milan, got Man City their first title as well. He put them right on the road again, and I think he'll be the next national team boss of Italy as well. So he's a top manager, and he brings a bit of sexiness, doesn't he, to the whole thing too.
John's in on Valentine's
exactly
Day.
Exactly, right. Hey.
Set it up there. John's in Coatbridge. Hi, John.
Hi guys, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
No problem, John.
I think you caught Brendan's done well with his press conference there. He's detracting the pressure off the players for the morrow. Same near the favourites, but with the budget they are, not, I mean, the same as we're ahead of people in Scotland with budgets, but I think he's taking the pressure off the players tomorrow. Just wanted to what I think, Martin, Jim, Hink.
No, I have to be honest with you. I think the pressure from Celtic comes from their own fans and their own demands, John. I think that Brendan can say that, of course, maybe to the Zenit camp, he might be playing a little bit, you know, kidology with them, but I think the Celtic fans by and large expect Celtic to put on a show, and regardless of the budget, I think they expect their team to go really and compete there and look to try and get through the tie. I think, yeah, you might be right. You might be just a little bit in terms of you know, saying is in it, and so perhaps if there's any kind of degree of complacency in any of their players, then that might filter through. But I think within the walls of Celtic Park, and Brendan Rodgers and Chris Davis and his team, you know, won't feel inferior in the slightest and won't look at the budgets. They will look and think, right, wait a minute, this is a tie we can win.
So if that is the case, Mark, if Brendan Rodgers is taking pressure off by mentioning the budget, is Roberto Mancini taking pressure off by mentioning the winter break, and all of a sudden, yeah, nobody's under pressure?
Yeah, you know, and it's over. It's over two legs. You know, I think this one, you know, I don't think either side is going to run away with it tomorrow and get a result. Like, for example, Man City got against last night, so it'll go to the wire in St Petersburg a week tomorrow, but I think anything other than a defeat for Celtic, I would take positives from it.
Can I come back in a wee minute, guys?
Of course you can.
Aye. See, a guy actually stole my thunder a wee bit there earlier on, a bit, when I was at our point. I think Jim Duffy would be a good appointment as part of the Scotland coaching squad. know what I mean? Because I think you're a good coach, Jim, you know what I mean? You do well, you know what I mean? With small budgets, with small teams, I think you'd be a good, with, in there with somebody else, you know what I mean? I think you'd be quite a good shout, mate, to be true for you.
Thanks, John. So they are.
I hope you don't beat us anyway. You know what I mean? Right. Listen, see, I know Mark's quite a good with his sport and things like that. Mark, see, was Mancini the manager Man City when Rogers, Brendan lost the league, aye?
No, I think it was Pellegrini.
What Roberto Mancini did say, John, for sure, in the last couple of days is that there was a time when he was thinking about bringing Brendan Rodgers to be part of his staff at Man City. Yeah, so the two clearly know each other.
He offered him a coaching job. Yeah, he certainly did.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call.
Great stuff. In fact, John just raises a nice point, Jim. I know it's a couple of days on, but the cup draw. You're going to go to Celtic Park. You plenty experience of that in recent years, of course. But reaction to that.
Yeah, maybe we should mention budgets. You know, if Celtic are talking about playing PSG or Bayern Munich or Zenit, I think our budget will be even a fraction when they open the doors at Celtic Park at times. But listen, it's a phenomenal draw for the club. It's an outstanding draw for the players. Every player at our club will want to be involved in that type of game. Of course, the board will be delighted. For me as a manager, it's the hardest possible game you could have got. There's no doubt Celtic are the number one team in the country. They've got the best players. What have they got? Two domestic defeats in over 80 games or so. So listen, it's a fantastic game to look forward to, but it's also the most difficult game to look forward to. So we'll need to be, you know, as well prepared as we possibly can be. And see if that's good enough to go and compete in the game.
Just on tomorrow's game, Mark, it was actually the caller John who raised the point there, talking about is Brendan Rodgers taking pressure off his players. Not, I suppose there does become a point when you look at managerial approach, and we all become amateur psychologists, don't we, trying to think of what message might be getting put across here. What will Brendan Rodgers' sort of main message be? Because I'm thinking maybe the Bayern Munich game. I know they lost, but is that the performance that they have to go and replicate? Is it the only one that's close enough? We had a tweeter earlier talking about Man City, which was of course last season. Yeah. What type of memory will he be trying to stir in his players and in terms of trying to replicate that?
Yeah, I think you're right, Gordon. Bayern Munich home was a great performance and very unlucky to lose a game, but the fans were on side that night. The stadium was bouncing, and yeah, because there's not too many in recent memory where you could say, yeah, you know, go for that. And Elect Away was a terrific performance and result. But yeah, you've got to look to the standard of Bayern Munich. But I think just in general, I just think that Celtic, you're just looking for an improvement. Look, they're still top of the league, they're still the best team. I'm loath to criticise them, I'm loath to draw comparisons to last season, because last season was exceptional and everybody just peaked at the right time and got everything going. But I just think this season there's been a bit missing, but it's never too late to revive it, and to do it tomorrow night would be the perfect start, particularly for the run-in of the season when they're going to try and clinch back-to-back trebles and try and make another inroad in Europe, and knocking out Zenit would be a major statement.
Right, okay. Well done to everyone on Twitter who's asking about the Valentine's theme that was running through Beat the Pundit and asking if that also applied to Gary Dicker. No, it did not, I don't think, anyway. And if it did, then we're in a bit of trouble. Let's move swiftly on. 01419511025. Keep your calls coming in this evening. Cal is in Airdrie. Hi, Cal.
Hi, yeah. How are you doing? How are you? All right?
Yeah, not bad. You?
Yeah, first time caller, so it's glad to be on. It's just a point about, I'm a Celtic fan, but it's a point about Kieran Tierney. I know Tavernier signed today, and that's good. I think we should be trying to keep talent in Scotland. I work in Helensburgh in a Subway sandwich shop, and it's actually owned by Kieran Tierney. He's got a chain of them. And I know that he follows Philip Lam on Instagram. He's talking a lot to Philip Lam on Instagram, and I just think it will be really hard for Celtic to keep Kieran Tierney for the next few years.
This is a bizarre call, Cal, I'm not going to lie. I am not calling you a liar. I just didn't know that about Kieran Tierney. I thought that's something I would have known.
In terms of his football, whether he contacts anyone else or not, listen, it's his footballing ability which will attract the top clubs over the next few years. Nothing to do with anything else. If he does get involved in another business side, it's his ability and his mentality, his personality, his attitude, all of those things will make him a top player. He is a top player, but we can take him to the very top of the game. And the big clubs already circling. I'm sure they're more than aware of him, and it's only a matter of time before one of them really steps up to the plate and says, "Listen, here's an offer, Celtic, and what do you think of it?" So he's an outstanding talent.
I think funny, one of the tweeters earlier on mentioned Paul McStay is one of the first loves, and I think I regard now Kieran Tierney in a Paul McStay mould in terms of, I think he's got a genuine love for the club. I think he will go in time. I think it will suit Celtic and suit Kieran Tierney in time to move, but I think he will only go to a top five or six club in England. I don't really see the relevance in the Philip Lahm thing, but I also think as well, if Kieran Tierney's plan comes to fruition, I get the feeling that he wants to be a part of history and a part to be something special, like a 10 in a row, which would still only be, what, 24 or 25 by that stage, if Celtic keep winning the titles, that is. But I think he genuinely has a love for Celtic. I don't think he's in any rush to go.
If you look ahead to this weekend, we've got Hamilton against Rangers, and that of course means a return to Hamilton for Greg Docherty. He spent his whole youth career there, been there for many years. Well, we're going to hear from a Hamilton Accies coach who knows him more than most. Keep your calls coming, we'll get to that and a full time teaser after these.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com, backing Scottish football all season long. Please gamble responsibly.
Mark Guidi and Jim Duffy here with me, Gordon Duncan, on tonight's Clyde One Super Scoreboard. The previous caller just before the break, it's very bizarre. I would like to clear up, just in case anyone cares, not that it's really any of our business, that Kieran Tierney does not own a chain of Subway sandwich stores. Other fast food outlets are available. Something I didn't expect to discuss on tonight's show, I must admit.
No, I'm not a Subway man myself.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, athlete over there, I can see that.
Big just Mac.
We don't pay too much attention to the Champions League, of course, but it's nice to keep an eye on things, and in particular when there's a bit of Scottish interest. So Andrew Robertson in for his Champions League debut tonight, and I can see a tweet here from a tweeter that's at Gracenote Live, and mentions that 5 years ago he played in Queen's Park's 2-1 win against Berwick Rangers in Scotland's League 2, and tonight he lines up in Portugal for Liverpool against Porto. There have been a number of these examples over the past couple of years, that these things that he kind of chalks off the progression chart. But again, fantastic stuff, isn't it?
I mean, it's an amazing story, really, and it's just a story of determination and pride. It's like one of those kind of Hollywood movies, isn't it, really, if you think about it. A young boy who was released from Celtic goes to Queen's Park. And it's a rocky story in essence, of how successful he's been. But it's down to his desire, his determination, of course ability. And you need a little bit of good luck along the way. But it's that never say die attitude. Don't give up, and keep chasing your dreams. And there's tonight is obviously the pinnacle of it, of playing the Champions League. So he's just a shining example of what might be achieved if you keep going for it.
Yeah, you're brilliant.
Happy with that? I thought you were going to elaborate.
I'm just an old pal. I know I like a bit of humour, Gordon. Just very quickly, our old pal Billy Sloan, who's actually touring on the tour bus with Simple Minds just now.
He played the Barry Lads last night, didn't he?
He's way down south for him. Now, anyway, Billy's still listening to the show, and he's giving me pelters for this breaking answer.
No wonder.
And he says you've made Fraser Wishart sound like a mastermind finalist.
That's no mean feat, I'll tell you that. Well, you've got a chance to redeem yourself, because I've got a full time teaser for you, sent in by Jerry in Erskine. I think we've possibly had one along these lines before, but it's topical and I like it, quite frankly. So we're looking for the 9 former Celtic or Rangers players since 2000 who've played in a Champions League final. I'd imagine not since 2000.
No, 2000.
Close. Henrik Larsson.
Right,
Gio van Bronckhorst.
Right.
I'll take one more if you've got it, and then we'll move on. Where's
Rino Gattuso.
Rino Gattuso. He's played in 3, by the way.
Yeah.
So there we are. Right. Well, we've got 3 so far. So Rino Gattuso, Giovanni van Bronckhorst, Henrik Larsson, 6 other former Celtic or Rangers players who've played in a Champions League final since 2000. We are going to hear from Hamilton's head of youth, George Cairns, on Greg Docherty. This is ahead of Greg Docherty going back, of course, to his former club this weekend. Let's squeeze in a call before we do that, though. Frank's in Shawlands. Hi, Frank.
Well, hello.
Hi, Frank.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
I can indeed. What's your point?
Good. Good show tonight, lads.
Thank you.
Thanks, Frank.
No, just a quick one. I thought we'd just throw this into the pot. Hearing the names about the manager for the Scotland team,
mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking, what's your thoughts on doing something quite fresh and exciting and getting somebody in maybe from outside football? Because is it not about leading, inspiring and motivating? And if I've had allegedly all the best managers, nothing's happened yet, is it a simple case of poor management? Is it a case that the players have let the manager down? Or is the players just not good enough? What's your thoughts?
Like who, Frank? Give us an example, perhaps, of someone that...
Well, it'd be great to come to the table with an example, but what I mean is it's just one of these
just
scenarios.
Just think outside the box a bit.
I mean, what you get all the time is... I feel a wee bit sorry for managers because the players continue to play good, bad and different, get their wages. The manager takes a stick, that goes with the job, I get that. But you kind of get a situation whereby a manager's in a role for 3 months, 6 months, the club lets him go, he's basically failed. The next minute he pops up as a saviour at another club and it might go a wee bit better for a wee while, but then he fails again. And then we get, oh, let's get him for the Scotland team. So, you know, it just seems like we're going round the circles with the same people time and time again. Would it not be better just getting a fresh pair of eyes on it and taking a different view on it, you know? Because if we've tried a lot of the alleged best managers and we've no qualified, do we go and regurgitate people who have been in the job, maybe no achieved much, and give them a shot? Or do we bring somebody really young in, fresh, and how much responsibility should the players take for qualifying or no qualifying? I think it needs to be asked.
I think I asked this question to one of the pundits, so forgive me if I'm being repetitive, but this story keeps developing. Is it a fair request from fans like Frank to, at the very least, we know we've not qualified for 20 years, so at the very least, we don't appoint someone who's failed in those 20 years to qualify? Is that not a decent starting point? Can you see why people like Frank
understand Frank's point of view and looking outside the box, look at something radical, trying to say, look, is it from someone from a different sport or whatever it happens to be? But I think you have to have knowledge of the game. I think that's the thing. And it's also a body of experience. And you can learn from experience as well. You know, I think that if someone has failed in a campaign, and as I said before, I'm out on record saying about Walter Smith. So if that didn't happen, well, even Walter can learn from that. You know what I mean? It doesn't. And I think sometimes we dismiss people too quickly, whether it had been a Gordon Strachan, you know, whether, you know, all these kind of things, whether it's Alex McLeish that's mentioned now. I think that you learn from it, you know, and if you get the opportunity, and not too many people get the opportunity sometimes to go back to that level and learn from the previous campaign and say, right, these are the good things, these are the things we've done right, these are the things we could have improved upon, and hopefully improve. Most club managers, not all, but most club managers get a second chance at it, so they can try and learn from their experience. But it's a shorter tenure at times because, you know, the game is so impatient now. But, you know, I understand where Frank's coming from, but I don't think you can be that radical that you can't get anyone who's never, knows nothing about football whatsoever, because I think you need to know the mentality of the players, you need to know the psychology of the players and the fans and the demands, and of course the opposition. You know, if someone comes up with something and you've no idea how the game works, I don't see how you can, how that
can
that
I,
can be
can
successful.
Can I jump back in, guys?
On you go.
Can I jump back in?
Yeah, on you go. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really appreciate that point, and it's a really valid point. But, you know, football's no rocket science. One end to other, ball in the net, goal, most goals wins. You know,
it's
first time I played football.
Very simplistic, Frank.
Well,
it's not
it's
like
a
that,
simple
mate.
Game. It's a
yeah,
simple game.
Yeah, complicated by players, but it's not, mate.
Well, the thing is, first person I ever heard say to me was, run into space, give yourself somewhere to run in, let somebody pass the ball to you. And we're still punting the ball up the field like we did a long time ago. But I just think, you know, manager aside, has the players been hungry enough in Scotland? Have they tried their hardest? And who's measuring them? Because it doesn't matter. If Alan McLeish is the best guy for the job, let's assume he is, right? Let's assume he's the very best manager for the job. If the players don't turn up, he's going to be at the job as well. And that's a harsh reality. So who are we going to bring in that's going to pull players together, inspire them, motivate them, and want to play for that jersey? you know, and be absolutely mad for playing with a Scotland jersey on. And it would seem to me that there doesn't have seemed to have been much of hunger there for a while, and we kind of leave it to the last minute. We seem to beat the teams we're not meant to, and we get thrashed by the teams we're meant to blow us. So it's all a bit frustrating, but I just thought I'd put it out there. I kind of, like a lot of guys I talk to, we get fed up listening to the same names getting spun around time and time again, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you there as well, but I mean, there's a couple of names. I've seen one today was actually kind of strange, because you're talking about Stevie Clark earlier on, right? Obviously, yeah. I know Stevie and I know him well, and he's done an outstanding job, and he's got a good pedigree. But strangely enough, he would never get mentioned, right, when he was at West Brom or Aston Villa, whatever the clubs he's been in the past. It just seems to be, he's up in Scotland, he's in my face, and he's doing really well now. Yeah. I think you should be looking at his track record. And great, I'm not an issue with Stevie, terrific. But what I'm saying, we tend to kind of, you know, look at someone's there. It's almost it seems a persona, an image, or this suits us. So let's say Stevie Evans. So I've seen Stevie the day saying, yeah, why can I not be going to it?
He's at Mansfield, isn't he?
Yeah, but Stevie Evans' record is terrific in terms of promoting, because he's not deemed as this
kind of fashionable choice.
Or a modern day man, whatever style you want to get. But I think sometimes we dismiss quality in people, and we dismiss talent, and we dismiss success. Because he's not for us. Oh, he's not got the right image. And image has almost seemed as part of the remit for the job, which I think is totally wrong. I think you've got to be looking at the qualities of a manager. And I think there's a number of other people like that, but Stevie's one of them. And because he's in people's faces, and it's a bit like Neil Warnock, for instance. You know, he seems to rub people up the wrong way. But I think the other night, somebody says he's got four promotions or four championships, whatever he's got, he's successful. But when a big job comes up, you'll never see Neil Warnock's name getting mentioned for us, for sure.
Thank you to Frank and Shawlins for that call. Still time to get yours in if you want to have an opinion on anything we've been discussing, or anything else within reason as well. It's Wednesday night. I suppose that's the time when we can slowly turn and look at the weekend's action that's coming up. And this weekend, of course, we're going to see a Hamilton against Rangers. Now, after spending more than 10 years at Hamilton, that game will see Greg Docherty return to the Super Seal Stadium for the first time since his move to Rangers. And the man who oversaw his progression through the ranks says it will be a strange sight seeing the midfielder line up for the opposition. Now, head of youth at Hamilton is George Cairns. Says he's delighted to see Docherty doing well at his new club, and says there weren't many people involved in his development as a player, not just the youth coaches.
I wouldn't say it was a quick ascendancy. We knew Greg had talent, but he's been with us for over 10 years, and when you pinpoint a player that you know is talented, you obviously work with him, but it comes down to the player as well. The player plays a big part in buying into what you try and do at the football club, and with Greg going 11s, 12s, 13s, 14s, 15s, into 17s, into 20s football, then obviously over 100 appearances for the first team, you know, it's something special, and you know, you like to see the player move on. Do we think he had a future at a young age? I think it's very hard to tell at a very young age. All you can do is work with these players and make them the best you can. And as I said, it works both ways. It's more on the player, because the player had the right attitude towards training, towards playing in games, you know, and Greg always had that. Greg always first to turn up, always trained hard and always played hard. Greg will get a good reception here at the football club, because he did a lot for the football club. We've got to forget, we can't forget, he was the guy that scored the winning goal against Dundee United that kept us in this division. So as a young youth player, you know, he's been fantastic for ourselves. So he'll get a good reception. And as for myself, it's great to see kids move on, because all kids move on. There'll be others after Greg. There was players before Greg. So you, as a head of youth, you want kids to move on and go to great things. That's what you want. So, you know, I can only wish him all the best, and hopefully he gets to where he wants to be as a player, and that's play at the top.
That will just be one of those moments, won't it, Jim? I'm very sure the Hamilton Accies fans give Greg Docherty a good reception. There's no doubt about that. Got his first start, I think, at the weekend, wasn't it, against Ayr. Do you see him being sort of in there and now nailing down a midfield slot for Rangers? They certainly have got numbers in that area.
Yeah, I mean, they've got huge numbers of players in that area now, and they've got likes of Graham Dorans and Ryan Jack now to come back. So that I think Rangers needed that competition in there, and you know, he's a different player, he's dynamic, you know, he can get forward, he can score goals. I think it's just something else, it's getting the right shape around him, getting the right balance and letting him fit into that team. But it's kind of strange how some clubs, when a player goes, regardless of whether he's done well before, regardless he's made them good money, they can still go back there and get stick, because a lot of fans think, well, I don't care, he's left the club now, so
you know, doesn't strike me as one that will on this occasion.
I agree with you, but what I'm saying, it's strange how, you know, kind of somebody to pick and choose. Well, yeah, like that guy, we'll give him stick, we'll not give this guy stick. But he's a young player, been at Hamilton all his career, and you know, he's made the club a significant amount of money, and as he said, he helped him to stay in the division as well. So I think it's great for both parties, and I think it's a tremendous tribute to his attitude. We get back to attitude again and desire, that they didn't see him as an out-and-out star. That he was very honest there. It's hard to say, but they could just gradually see him improving as the weeks and months went on.
Now we're going to check in with the Scotland under 17 camp. They're over in Spain. They managed to beat Spain in their own backyard. Seems like something worth celebrating. We're going to hear from head coach Brian McLaughlin in the last part of tonight's show. I'll take a couple more on the teaser if you've got them. 9 former Celtic or Rangers players who played in a Champions League final since 2000. We've got Gattuso, we've got Van Bronckhorst, we've got Larsson.
Nuno Capuccio.
Nope.
Dado Pirzo.
Yes.
Julian Rodriguez.
That's the hard one as well.
Two Monaco boys.
I think you're going to scoosh this.
I'm going to get that. Rodriguez.
That's the hard one.
But that was it.
Well, we'll get the rest of the answers after these.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Download the app and score a tap-in. Please gamble responsibly.
Guidi and Jim Duffy have been using the last couple of minutes to try and think about answers to the full-time teaser. They're asking me for clues and everything, but it's a bit early for that. We're looking for the 9 former Celtic or Rangers players who played in a Champions League final since 2000. So far, Reno Gattuso, Dado Pirzo, Julian Rodriguez, one of the hard ones, Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, Henrik Larsson, Kolo Touré. That's 6 out of
Jim,
9.
Jim just got Kolo Touré.
Or did you get that during the break? Right, so Kolo Touré was the latest one. 3 to get. The only clue I'll give you: 2 former Rangers, 1 former Celtic.
No, you said it was the other way about during the break.
Two former Rangers, one former Celtic.
No wonder we're confused.
Oh yeah, that's the excuse. Now I suppose you could see this as a bit of a follow up to our youth football week. You may remember during the winter break we looked at all things from boys clubs, schools football, to the Scottish FA's performance schools, the professional academies, all the rest of it. Well, there was good news for the under 17 Scotland team last night. I told you this on last night's show. They beat Spain 2-1 on their own patch yesterday. So I thought it'd be a good time to catch up with head coach Brian McLaughlin. We had him in the studio a couple of weeks ago. I caught up with him earlier and I began by asking him what it was that pleased him the most yesterday.
I think for myself it was level performance. You know, we wanted to come over to Spain and play Spain here in their own country, and it was really, really important that the boys went onto the pitch and really wanted the ball, and we really wanted to try and keep possession off Spain, because I think that is the only way you can defend against them. And I think for the boys to actually go and achieve that over the full game and ultimately win the game, that for me, it was the performance rather than just the result for me.
I think everyone acknowledges, Brian, that these kids are, you know, whatever, 16 years of age, still got a long way to go, and various things can happen. But in terms of looking at the overall system, I think it was 14 Scottish FA Performance School pupils involved. That must give you and everyone else there a great cause for optimism.
I think I was on your show a few weeks ago and I'd mentioned the performance school, and it's a fantastic learning opportunity for these young players during the day, and we've got this combination of performance schools and the clubs coming together. And the players that are doing both together are, you know, without doubt, receiving fantastic coaching during the day and night time. And when they come to countries like Spain, they're not fazed by the challenges ahead of them. And without doubt, over the last 3 or 4 years, we're now starting to see not just better technical players, but I think better educated players tactically as well.
Now, I know you're still to play France and you're down to the bare bones a bit. You've got a few injuries racking up. But prior to the Spain game, you also beat Poland, who are also very highly thought of at that age group as well.
Yes, they are. You know, the two of them have actually came to is fantastic. We had Poland in the first game, which was a real physical challenge. Poland are a very good team. They've also qualified for the elite rounds. Spain game is obviously superb in terms of that was a real technical game. And now we've got France, but we are, you know, we're short of numbers now. So we're probably down about 12 players. We've obviously not got the likes of Harry Cook and Anthony Donald, because they're with first team just now, which is great. So, like I said, tomorrow is an opportunity for the young boys to come in, and they'll just go and try and play a normal way. We're not going to change.
listen, be crazy of us in here in the studio, Mark and Jim, to get carried away by a result under 17 level. But yeah, listen, I'm all for good news stories. And as Brian McLaughlin points out, this is an age group which could have Harry Cochrane and Anthony McDonald if they weren't in Hearts first team. Billy Gilmore only played the first game and was allowed to go back to Chelsea. So you've got to look for positive signs, don't you?
Yeah, of course you have. You know, I think it's great if we can win at any level at that level. But you know, there's been a few false dawns over the years. You know, we've had a number of
It tends to be the next few years, doesn't it?
You know, even just a couple of years ago, you know, going to the 19s and the 21s and that, you know, we're generally not too bad. It's that next stage, and I suppose people will look at it in a different aspect and say, what can we do to try and encourage some of these talented young players to be more successful, or a higher ratio of them get into first team level. But you know, Hearts having those couple of young boys just now is terrific, you know, and it's brave throwing them in at 16. And really, that's what has to be done. Somewhere along the line, one or two clubs have to take more of a risk, or else, you know, they'll just, you know, they'll fall out the system. But yeah, great result. And as Brian said, he was delighted with the performance. And if you manage to keep the ball a little bit better than Spain, then there's something right in that, that's for sure.
Right, you're going to have to get a move on. I'll give you a clue. The ex-Celtic player you're looking for played for Arsenal in 06, right? And the two former Rangers players you're looking for were on opposite sides in the 04 final between Porto and Monaco. Let's squeeze in a call from Kevin in Cambuslang. Hi, Kevin.
Oh, hi panel.
Hello.
It's regarding the Scotland manager's job. The Rangers getting bandied about for it. I don't think Stevie Clarke will take it. The reason I don't think that he'll take it is, it's just a feeling I've got. I think after this season, Brendan will get another 2 years, and then he'll go back down to England. He'll get a bit more European experience under his belt. That will give Stevie Clarke a bit of time to do something special with Kilmarnock, and then he'll be ready for the Celtic job. Now, I might be totally wrong, and Rangers might get him at the end of the season.
I love this when people have not, because I find Scottish football hard to call, as in what's going to happen at the weekend. But Kevin, in fairness to him, has got the next 3 years all mapped out. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's you know, Kevin's obviously, you know, thoughts, and he's perfectly entitled to do them. But I think when you're at a club at Kilmarnock, and Stevie will know this, then you know the success rate is dependent on so many things, and you know, even doing so well just now doesn't guarantee him anything from next year. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, I remember when Inverness, Caledonian and Thistle won the Scottish Cup, people were talking about John Hughes, you know, and they were talking about he'd be the next manager. And when you're successful and you're doing well, people will look at that a way ahead. But it's consistency, and consistency at clubs like Kilmarnock is very, very difficult. So listen, let him enjoy his time at Kilmarnock, let him be as successful as he possibly can, and we'll see what happens further down the line. But for me, if Stevie keeps continuing to do well, not only will he have perhaps one or two clubs in Scotland looking for him, he'll have one or two bigger clubs in England as well. So I that's part of the reason why I don't see him as a Scotland manager, because I think there's so much ahead of him, I think, probably down south.
Mark, we're probably in an era where even if a manager does really well or does really poor, it doesn't even matter. Even 2 years now, for Stevie Clarke still to be at Kilmarnock 2 years, there's something just quite unbelievable about that, because Jim's maybe a different case, but people, they just don't tend to even last that long in jobs.
No, you're lucky if you get 18 months now, you know, it's probably the average span, you know. And Jim was saying just on Stevie Clarke, you know, he's under our noses, and he's, you know, performed wonders in the past sort of 3-4 months, 7 home wins, and all, etc, etc. And you know, I was thinking, had Craig Levein not been Scotland manager 6-7 years ago, Craig Levein would be in the running just now. Yeah. Craig Levein would say, he's Scottish, look what he's done with Hearts.
He's made them really hard to beat.
Harry Cochrane, Craig Levein's got to be a contender. But because he's had the job, he doesn't seem to be a contender. Look, I don't know who it's going to be, but it's important that we get somebody good in. And the bottom line is, Gordon, whether it's getting to the playoffs through the Israel and Albania route or through the route that's open in 2019, we just need to get to a final. Just give us somebody that can get us to a final.
The Champions League games have kicked off. We're sort of Scottish bias perspective on Andy Robertson watch. It's still Porto 0, Liverpool 0, Real Madrid 0, PSG 0 in that other game as well. Thanks to Kevin and Cambus Lang, by the way, we really have to turn our attentions to the full time teaser. We're still three short on the 9 former Celtic or Rangers players who played in the Champions League final since 2000. Right, let's start with Arsenal 06. You've already got Kolo Touré. He was his wee team mate.
Nah, I haven't a clue. If we knew what we'd say, he's not looking at his daft expression.
He's from the same neck of the woods as Henrik Larsson.
or Freddie Lindberg?
There we are. Told you it wasn't hard.
Can I see if he was a model or something like that? Maybe gives a clue. I think he was an Armani
right,
model or
next
something.
Next to
you
know? So, it's the Porto Monaco. The 2004 final. One for Porto, one for Monaco.
Try to think of Capucho's team.
Right, so the Porto one, this guy had a decent career down south as well. Played for Spurs, for instance. I think it was Spurs. Perhaps a spell at Portsmouth just made me sound like he's one of these guys that followed Harry Redknapp around.
Oh, it's not crazy.
A nice long ponytail, unlike you two.
No, we've got Dado Puzzle.
Once scored that infamous goal that never was at Old Trafford.
Pedro Mendes.
And the last one is obscure. Monaco, I'm not going to lie. I think he was a winger. Came to Rangers fairly briefly.
Who signed him for Rangers? Alec McLeish.
Paul Le Guin, I think.
Paul Le Guin.
This is a Sionco proper obscure one. No, along that line.
Lubo Sionko.
Played for Monaco in 04.
Jeremy Clement?
No.
Oh, I don't know.
I'll just put you out your misery. You're going to have to. Time's running out.
Yeah, who is it?
Jerome Rothen.
Wouldn't have got that.
Never in a million.
Thank you to Jim Duffy and for Mark Guidi. Thanks to you for listening at home. We're back at 6 o'clock tomorrow.
Clyde One Super Scoreboard with Ladbrokes.com. Bet and play and pull a result out of the bag. Please gamble responsibly.